afternoon. Whew. Yeah, that was kind of loud. Second hour of We the People Radio with a lot less of We the People and a lot more of Jim Lee, our guest. So we're not going to take up any more of his time because you heard all that in the first hour. We'll tell you that all of the stuff we're talking about is posted on the page at wethepeopleradio.us. And he has some really awesome websites, and I know we're going to talk about his mapping tool because it's amazing. But, Jim, we get a lot out here in our neck of the woods about geoengineering, and a lot of it is, you know, they're spraying aluminum on us and all this stuff. You know, what's the scoop on that?
Well, it's actually really, really, really complicated. And that's the number one problem with the chemtrail debate is that I think everybody wants to sit on the couch and have it spoon-fed to them. And, you know, in order for me to do that, it's going to take a couple hours for you to really, really understand how complicated it actually is. And I'll just lead with this one. Aerosol cloud interaction is the greatest unknown in climate science today. And what I mean by that is that how particles in the air form clouds and what those clouds do in climate models is so poorly understood it's almost not even existent in IPCC models, in projections of what the future would be like if we geoengineered models, even though we already are. None of these models accurately account for clouds. And that's like the biggest, you know, scam going around is that they're so confident in their projections that CO2 is a problem that they're not really talking about the clouds. What makes it more interesting is that five geoengineers co-authored the IPCC reports on contrails. So that's an obvious conflict of interest when you're talking about people who are out lobbying for the government to buy planes, rent planes, borrow planes, hijack planes, and convert them to spray chemicals into the stratosphere to block sunlight. So that's what they call geoengineering solar radiation management. They've now like kind of abandoned the term solar radiation management. Now they want to call it albedo modification. And albedo is the amount of light that is reflected back to space, the radiation budget, as they like to say, of the planet. So what they're talking about is they saw Mount Pinatubo blow sky high. They said, this is a great idea. You know, that volcano just cooled the planet. They did it with sulfuric acid. We could put sulfuric acid in the sky, cool the planet ourselves. It'll be cheap, in fact, according to David Keith and Ken Caldera. So in 1994, Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, the man euphemistically known by his friends as Dr. Evil,
nice.
By his own friends,
yeah, that's not good.
He created geoengineering as a weapon that should never be used, very similar to the hydrogen bomb. It was a threat to the world, you know, stop polluting so much or we will geoengineer. Much like the, you know, nuclear arms race, stop or this hydrogen bomb will erase you from the planet. So that's the similarity that I see in the push for geoengineering today. And it gets very, very muddied by certain individuals who like to refer to chemtrails as a geoengineering program, because at the end of the day, there is this massive push for a global governance and, you know, controlling what I call legalized geoengineering. And then there is the geoengineering that has been going on for 60 plus years from ship tracks and what is also called aviation induced cloudiness. So what's really going on, if you really want to start with nuts and butts, is that there's two kinds of geoengineering. There's the geoengineering that's been happening for 60 years from ship tracks and planes. And then there's the legalized geoengineering that's being proposed in all these governance circles with these NGOs writing laws to try to decide that if they ever do legalize geoengineering, how do you pay for the dead people?
Right.
Because COP21 happened last year. This is the climate of conference of Paris 21. It's where Obama and all of the world leaders signed the, you know, declaration that we will not let the planet heat up more than 2 degrees Celsius. Now, that was all a setup. And what they said was before the meeting that in order to meet a 2 degree Celsius, you know, temperature rise goal, that we would need to do geoengineering or climate engineering, as it was rebranded. And then finally, it was rebranded as climate intervention, because engineering's a bad thing. Everybody knows that cars brakes, and you don't want somebody, an engineer, breaking the climate. So they stopped calling it climate engineering or geoengineering. They started calling it climate intervention. And guess who paid for that term? The CIA. So the CIA funded the National Academy of Science report that just happened last year. And in it, they said, we should not call it climate engineering. We should call it climate intervention. And the CIA paid $630,000 to study geoengineering. Another interesting coincidence happened. The CIA called a geoengineer. His name is Alan Robach. And they said, if another country was geoengineering our climate, would we know it? And Alan Robach said, yeah, I think we would. I think. Mm-hmm. And he was wrong. So Diane Seidel, I think I'm saying her name right, was at the 20th annual weather modification conference. They have them in Phoenix. I think it was in Phoenix. This was in January of 2015. So she's at the AMS, the American Meteorological Society's conference on planned and inadvertent weather modification. That's the title of it. And in January 2015, she said, no, we cannot detect rogue geoengineering. We would not be able to tell the difference between if God made the sky cloudy and if man made the sky cloudy. Which really set my head on its side, because then I thought to myself, well, if that's the case, if there's no way to legally catch somebody geoengineering the planet, and we know that they are geoengineering with ships and planes, what do we do about it? That's why I built Climate Viewer 3D. So, like, I had started building this. I taught myself to code websites like 3 or 4 years ago, and I'm finally getting good at it. Because my old websites look like crap. You should go to Wayback Machine and take a look. But it's finally starting to look good. And I went and I got all of the satellites and weather data, like the wind direction, precipitation, radar, and I put it all into one map in the hopes that I could detect a man-made alteration of the weather or climate. And I found a couple interesting ones. One time I saw a wall appear above Harp, where literally the clouds looked like they hit a wall and they all went south, when they should have been going east. And it was very interesting. And I noticed that the HARP transmitter was on during that period, and I documented the whole thing. Anyway, I'm working on a big documentary at some point where I can go, this is what it really looks like when they modify the weather, but stay tuned for that. So that was the purpose of building Climate Viewer 3D, was that, A, you can't catch somebody doing weather warfare. So if, you know, some government decided to steer a hurricane our way or make it rain really hard and flood us out, we would never be able to catch them. And now we have geoengineering to deal with. How could we catch somebody who's geoengineering the planet? So that's why I built Climate Viewer 3D, and it's at climateviewer.org. And we're still working on it, you know what I mean? Eventually, I want to go with sensors that you could buy, put in your backyard, and detect aerosols, detect if there's a radioactive release near your house, have an all-sky camera so we can see the cloud formations over your house and record it permanently, have it publicly available. So we would build a sensor network to rival NASA's aerosol robotic network and, you know, the EPA's RadNet. Just do it all in one unit. It detects, silver iodide, aluminum, barium, strontium, uranium, cesium. Now, this would be expensive, don't get me wrong, but with demand comes a drop in price. So in the future, what I'm talking about here is the future. Is the future, it will be a citizen-powered network where you have a sensor that you can put on top of your house and verify it your dang self.
Right. That'd be nice.
And that's my solution, and that's what I'm pushing for. Is there was a law passed in 1978 banning weather warfare, and it's called NMOD, and it was a UN, you know, resolution, treaty, paper, whatever. And they did it because we were modifying the weather in Vietnam. It's called Operation Popeye, Operation Motor Pool, a couple other things. But basically, we were making the Ho Chi Minh Trail so muddy that the Viet Cong couldn't travel along it. So we were doing rainfall enhancement, precipitation augmentation, whatever you want to call it. We were making it rain in Vietnam with three planes for 5 years. And nobody knew. This was top secret. Nobody knew. On Lyndon Johnson's desk in the Oval Office, Jack Anderson, reporter, saw a note that said, continue Popeye, and the word weather modification on there. And the rest is history. You know, if he hadn't seen the memo, we'd never know this happened. There'd have been no NMOD. And then Senator Pell had some hearings to follow up, you know, on what Jack Anderson had found. And he says, you know, we should ban weather warfare altogether. And then later we had NMOD. Well, the thing is, in 1978, they banned weather warfare. There is no way to this day to detect weather warfare. So I'm just shaking my head. You know, I'm not a PhD holding Nobel laureate, you know, person. But if you're going to ban a thing, you might want to be able to tell when the thing is happening.
Right, right. So, Jim, in the case of Vietnam, though, they had to have clouds present in order for that program to work, didn't they? I mean, could they actually create clouds out of a blue sky and make it rain in a certain area?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So you do have to have moisture present, but yes, the military can create its own clouds. We see that every day with jet aircraft. So back in 1958, the U.S. Navy was dumping carbon black dust, which is similar to soot. It is a nanoparticle black spherial. It's a circle, tiny little, you know, golf ball, but minuscule, like, you know, you could barely see it. It would look like soot in your, if you went camping and you burn a fire, that black ash you see. They would take this carbon black dust in 1958, suspend it in a liquid and pour it out the back of a plane, and they made a mile long straight cloud. Then they went back and they did the same thing, except they did little spurts and they made little puffy round clouds. Then they went back with the same plane and the same dust, did not suspend it in a liquid, put the carbon black dust into those clouds and melted them away. 1958. So they've known since the early 50s that carbon black dust is an excellent cloud seed. And a cloud seed is the little nugget at the middle of every single drop of water in a cloud. And that's what water coalesces on. It sticks to it. And as that water gets bigger, it falls down, and that's what rain is. So if it weren't for cloud seeds, which are aerosols, these are tiny little particles free-floating in the atmosphere, that's what makes clouds, that's what makes rain, that is the magic, you know, bullet for geoengineering, weather modification, all this. You have to understand aerosols and seeds and how they make clouds and how they affect weather. And the military has known about this since 1958. They were using it. NOAA was using carbon black dust during Operation Storm Fury, modifying hurricanes. The military today, in 1994, there were two FOIAs, one to the U.S. Air Force, one to the Navy. And the U.S. Air Force Phillips Lab said that they wanted to use carbon black dust to modify the weather. And owning the U.S. Navy said, we need to start doing weather modification again as well. So even though there's NMOD on the books, even though it's illegal, they're back at it. They also went to the Owning the Weather in 2025 paper. In there is a slide that says we need to create carbon black dust weather modification by 2005. And it's to be developed by the Department of Defense. Then the very next year, Dr. Arnold Barnes from the Air Force Phillips Lab, not a coincidence, gave a talk at the U.S. Army and U.S. Air Force Joint Test Technology Symposium, Weather Modification 97. And in 1997, he said, let's use carbon black dust to modify the weather. And the reasons I want to do it are the same reasons we did it in Popeye, to muddy roads, to wash out bridges.
Right.
So history is now repeating itself. And we have the military involved in weather warfare. We have the CIA involved in rogue geoengineering because climate change is a national security concern.
Yeah.
And that's why people see the CIA's airliners, which they have their own airline. Look it up. And these are white planes that are unmarked. So this is not like a hop, skip, and a jump away from reality. This is reality. And that's what I try to tell people about chemtrails is, yes, you've got military weather warfare. It's never going to be public. They don't have to tell you. You'll find out when you're 50 years from now, they'll admit to it because most of the people who did it are dead. And the CIA, national security, you know, that's what, you know, it's critical infrastructure, protect it from the national security concern that is rising oceans and blah, blah, blah. So because Obama has pushed this narrative that it is a national security concern, that it has really come to fruition since 2005 when it was first mentioned in all these government documents. But basically, the U.S. government is scared of climate change because of things like Water 2025, water wars, the blue gold rush. That there will be mass migrations. Even in America, they have like civilian conflict zones where people will be shooting it out over water in Arizona.
Well, we got to take a real quick break, Jim. But when we come back, I want to stay on this. I want to know what we're seeing in the skies and what that's about.
We can definitely do it.
Alrighty, we'll be right back. You can find all the information about Jim Lee and all his multiple websites, and I do hope you go to the Climate Viewer because it's very, very cool. It's at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my give a damn's busted.
Hey, hey, you get off of my back. Hey, hey, you get off of my back. Hey, hey, you get off of my back. Don't hang around on a thing with the crowd on my back.
And we're back. You are listening to We the People. We've got Jim Lee with us, who researches environmental pollution, geoengineering, and has a bunch of, apparently, mind control articles on his website. I just don't know how I skipped over that one last time. You must have been using your special mind control on me. as I start coughing yet again, sorry about that. Okay, Jim. So we had a call during the break there. So we get a lot of information that the geoengineers are spraying. You know, the reason we find aluminum in the soil is it's coming out of spray nozzles in planes overhead.
Well, it's because we see almost every day we see these trails in
right.
the sky that are different patterns. I mean, some of them, I agree, are a checkerboard pattern, and some of them are, you know,
so you had, but you had told
lines.
Me last week on the phone about some of where the aluminum comes from. Can you hit that a little bit so we don't forget?
Yeah, so aluminum's in the jet fuel. Boom. It's naturally there. It's so back in the day, the military used to use JP5 jet fuel. It was a gasoline-based fuel. And I've got a spectral analysis. That's where they tear apart the material and see what's in it. You know what I mean? Like on the atomic level. And in the JP5 was about 2,000 parts per billion of aluminum. But don't get me wrong. But then from 1988 to 1996, the entire NATO organization switched from gasoline to diesel fuel. And most people don't know this. It's called the NATO single fuel concept. And in this conversion, they pretty much destroyed their engines. They destroyed fuel filters. They had to redesign a lot of the fuel delivery systems. But long story short, if you went and put diesel fuel in your gas-burning Ford Mustang, I think you can imagine what would happen.
Yeah, bad thing.
So, yeah, the reason they did this is that it was called One Fuel for the Battlefield. And the idea was NATO could save a whole lot of money on gas if they could put the same gas in their tanks, jeeps, and planes. So they were putting diesel fuel in the tanks and in the jeeps, and they were putting gas in the planes, and the planes were exploding because people would shoot them with a bullet and a spark would make it explode. And the diesel fuel, much lower flash point, so it's much safer. You know, there was a bunch of reasons they did it, but at the end of the day, they did it to save money. So, allegedly, to save money. So, they started this single fuel concept in 1988. They completed it in 1996, and they invented something called JP-8. And JP-8 has 9,000 parts per billion of aluminum in it.
And is it a gasoline base or is it a diesel base?
It's a diesel fuel, so okay. It's a kerosene base. Instead
right,
of a gasoline base, it's kerosene. And most people don't know this, so I have to throw that out there. So in the jet fuel itself, in the JP-8, is 9,000 parts per billion of aluminum. Now, we're talking somewhere around 20 billion gallons of fuel burned every year. So what seems like not a lot becomes a lot. Because the flash point of the fire in the back of the exhaust is not high enough. The temperature of the exhaust is not high enough to vaporize that aluminum, so to speak. That aluminum is pretty much coming out as aluminum oxide, aluminum something. So regardless, the aluminum's in the jet fuel. It is burned, and then it goes out into the atmosphere. And coincidentally, the single fuel concept ended in 1996 when they had converted all 20-something countries of jets to kerosene in 1996. And 1997 was the first time the word chemtrails was ever used on the internet. And the first three articles about chemtrails were about JP-8. So if you don't know the history, you're probably going to get real far off the mark real quick, because as the title of the show states, there is a lot of fear porn associated with chemtrails. And my main goal at climateviewer.com is where conspiracy meets reality. You know, I'm not a debunker. I'm a guy who proves conspiracies, you know, and I don't waste my time on ones I can't prove. And this one I can prove. I can prove to you where the aluminum comes from, how you make the clouds, what they do, who's modifying them, this stuff called fuel sulfur content geoengineering, where now they're trying to alter the sulfur content of jet fuel to cool the planet, because currently these clouds are trapping heat and heating the planet, and that means that the airline industry is going to have to pay a healthy carbon tax. So if they don't get their feces consolidated, they're going to be broke. And this is something that most people don't know about. And if you're going to be a researcher, what's the number one rule?
You have to actually do the research?
That and follow the money.
Right, right.
So if you follow the money, the number one cost in the airline industry is their fuel bill. And that's why there's so much, technology that goes into this fuel today. And that's why we saw the chemtrail phenomena start in 1997, was because suddenly 28 countries of military planes were flying kerosene-based fuels that had a whole lot more aluminum in it and a whole lot more. Now, so you have to ask yourself, was that an intentional geoengineering program, or was it just to change the jet fuel to kerosene so they could save money? Whichever side of the fence you fall on, the people who decided that, it's not a huge conspiracy. You know what I mean? Like, there are literally like seven guys who are on something called the NATO Pipeline Committee. And the NATO Pipeline Committee can determine, A, what the jet fuel needs to be, and B, what additives go in it. And once they decide that, those seven people, 28 countries simultaneously are flying with that kind of fuel. This is not rocket science here. I mean, you literally have a group of people in a secret committee, because their names are not public. Trust me, if it was, I'd have found it. I got to a couple classified walls on the internet and couldn't go beyond them. But regardless, the NATO pipeline committee writes these things called STANAGs, and these STANAGs are used by the military for their, these are what the performance of the fuels have to be. This is what has to be in them. These are the additives you add to it. And also in 1996, when the chemtrail thing started, they came up with something called a plus 100 additive. And it's got like five trade secret ingredients in it. So it's a secret. And they put it in there to heat the fuel up another 100 degrees. And that was another aha, what the crap moment. They used the fuel tank in a jet plane as a radiator. So they actually heat the fuel to like 200 degrees. And this plus 100 additive allows them to heat the fuel to 300 degrees with the purpose of being able to fly higher. So like the U-2 spy plane is a great example. It flies up into the stratosphere. It is freezing freaking cold up there. So they came up with a chemical they could just add to the jet fuel, which would allow them to make the ice crystals in the jet fuel, you know, as they're exiting, smaller. And anybody who knows anything about cloud seeds and how sublimation works and how these aerosols interact in the atmosphere, what you find out is the smaller the particle, the longer it stays in the atmosphere. So the longer its resident time. So if you're making ice crystals that are smaller, they're going to stay up there longer, and they're going to fan out and make cirrus clouds. And that's what everybody's seeing. So what I try to tell you, and we just went over weather warfare, CIA, yes, that stuff still happens to this day, and I guarantee it. But
so are you saying that the clouds that are the trails that we're seeing in the skies today in checkerboard patterns and parallel patterns, and they're being intentionally put up there by the CIA?
No. See, that's where I always, and this is why a lot of people, you know, hate on me, because I don't get a lot of love from either camp, debunkers or the other people, because I'm trying to be realistic about this.
Yeah,
so,
Bill.
Well, no, I am too, and I, you know, this yeah. is all we hear is there's this secret program, and that's what they're doing.
They're modifying
the weather.
Off.
Everybody's paid yeah. off. Every, you know, they got these planes equipped with these big spray systems and nozzles and all this stuff. What's your take on that?
I've never seen a nozzle that I couldn't find the original photo for it, and it was fake. So. And that's in 6 years. And I challenge anybody, bring it my way, jim@climateviewer.com. I've seen them all. And there's a thing called Google Image Search you guys really should try. You just drag an image to the Google bar. It'll show you everywhere that was ever posted before. And even if it was Photoshopped a little bit, you can usually find the original. Hmm. But most of them are like flame retardant systems or ballast tests. Ballast tests are when you first build a plane, you want to pretend that a 400-pound man ran from the front of the plane to the back of the plane. And the reason you do that is because he's got to poop really bad, and you don't want him to do it mid-flight and find out the plane will flip itself over. So they put these ballast tanks in where the seats would be, and they rapidly move liquids from one tank to the other. That's why you see pump pipes connecting them all together, and that's to simulate occupants or cargo in the plane moving.
Yeah, I've been told that.
Yeah, you do that at altitude to make sure the plane isn't going to flip over or fall apart. They do it. It's required for every plane when it's first designed. I guarantee you that. So a lot of people use these photos. They say, look, it's a bunch of chemtrail. You know, I would love to find one that was real, but I have not, and why I stick
to
my story.
So what are we seeing? If they're not intentionally laying these patterns down, who is it and what are they doing?
Okay, so there's a thing called Skynet. Ooh, I didn't mean to call it that. It's called NextGen. So there's this supercomputer, not called Skynet, called NextGen, that's owned by the FAA, and it actually routes all of the flights. So there are highways in the sky.
Right.
And these planes, they fly on computer-controlled routes that are determined by it. Now, it has something called the Aviation Environmental Design Toolkit, AEDT. And do I really need to explain Aviation Environmental Design Toolkit?
That's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, it is. So what it does is it tells the supercomputer, it makes a judgment, and it says, the wind's going this way, and you're going to fly from here to here. So you're going to have to fly into the wind. And if you fly at this angle, at this speed, burning this much thrust, that you will save X amount of gallons of fuel. And they also have these noise ordinances that the computer has to account for. So you're not allowed to, like, burn your engine wide open over a city. So you have to account for that. And the computer tells them everything. So technically, in most cases, these pilots are literally taking off and then turning on the autopilot. Because that's what they're designed to do. That's what the system is designed to do. It saves them a ton of money. So you get these highways in the sky, and you end up where they're on a laser. I mean, it's a laser accurate path. I've done it over my house. Plane comes over directly over my house. The wind is blowing. Now the trail has moved to the side. Another plane comes over directly over my house. Now I've got two parallel lines. The wind keeps blowing. Another one comes over my house. I've got three parallel lines. And in many cases, these paths overlap. So that's why you end up with checkerboards. And the sky is a river. It's constantly moving. And the planes aren't actually moving. They're in the exact same damn spot as they're coming over because the computer told them to.
Now, are these planes military planes and civilian aircraft?
That's why I want to draw the line as clear as I can. I would say 10% of what I've seen in video evidence could be attributed to the CIA or military. The rest of it is American Airlines and Delta, and that is pollution. Now, here's the thing, and I've been saying this for 6 years, and you know what? I have not seen any evidence to the contrary. If I had, I'd be shouting it from the rooftops. Now, the white planes that we're seeing that are unmarked, those are more than likely CIA planes. They could be military planes, but regardless, that junk is top secret. What you going to do about it? I want to do something about it. I'm trying to be pragmatic. The rest of it is, you know, grandma flying home for Thanksgiving. You can go get augmented reality viewers. I do it myself. Bring my iPad outside, hold it up in the air, look at the plane. Little circle appears around the plane. I click on it. Delta Airlines. So when I'm seeing commercial flights on a regular basis doing the exact same thing, sometimes not to the degree of the white planes I'm seeing, you know, some of those white planes I see go overhead, they can coat most of the sky by themselves, insanely wide trails. So that's why it looks like they're intentionally up to something. But the other planes, they're still making clouds, and they're making lots of them. And the thing is, how do you find a smoking gun proving this? Well, I have one, but it happened in 2010. So in 2010, Ulrich Schumann is a German scientist from the DLR. He went to the ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization. This is a organization of all the airline carriers, and it's a UN organization. He went to them in 2010 and said, we need less warming and more cooling contrails, and we need them predictable for operational control. He then went and made a program called the Contrail Cirrus Prediction Tool, COSIP, which will tell them when the planes are going to make clouds. The smoking gun of this, that Delta Airlines and American are now involved in geoengineering, is that statement alone. We don't want contrails that trap heat. We want cooling ones. So what he's saying there is, we're not going to get rid of these clouds. We like them. We just don't like what they're doing. So we need to find out a way to make them do what we want. And that is a geoengineering experiment. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
It totally does. Bob, your call. Take the call, take the break.
Yeah, we can take the call.
Okay. We have Lori on the line. She has a question for you, Jim.
Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Jim. I'm not sure if you can hear me. Sometimes on remotes it's hard, but can you hear me?
Oh, just fine.
Go ahead. He can hear you.
Thank you. My question is, with the earlier conversation about people being potentially paid off, I'm wondering if that's not so much the case as it is the federal illegal gag order by NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as well as the National Weather Service, so that people who are the top execs all the way down to the person at the copy machine are forbidden to talk about any of their policies, their non-disclosure agreements and so forth. So it might not just be about ka-ching, money, and silencing in the traditional sense. And my other question was the topic of radio frequency, that we see these herringbone patterns that are either from DARPA cell towers, and they're creating these steering or microwaving these emissions or aerosols, or there's so many names for what we're all talking about. So I'm just concerned about that dynamic and the patterns. That's my third question, Jim, if you can address. A lot of these commercial aircraft are not doing U-turns. They're not doing corkscrews. They're not following each other within a few feet or following each other in the same line. Or sometimes I have film footage of four jets and craft in four different directions in one shot of the sky. And I've been doing this for a couple of years. So I just wanted to get your assessment on some of these other observations, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent question. So we'll start at the last one. So that's exactly what she was talking about, is exactly what I'm talking about. It's the 10%. There's always going to be these cases where we see something that we know is not commercial aviation. And there's plenty of examples of these videos, and I'm sure that she could provide a couple for you. But, yeah, planes doing U-turns, planes just hanging out, doing circles in one spot, like an E3 AWACS just spinning around. We're always going to see weird things that are not attributable to the airline industry. They're attributable to the military and the CIA. And I'm trying to draw this line for people so that they understand that that 10%, it's going to be very tough to deal with those people because they have, you know, very strict agendas, which are classified, and we're going to have a tough time dealing with them. But if you just call what they're doing pollution, you could deal with it today. And that's just a mindset thing that I have. It's about being pragmatic. I know that you're up to something nefarious, but I'm going to call it pollution because I can walk into a court and say the military is polluting the sky. Here's video footage of it. But if I walk into a court and I say the military is up to a secret program, here's footage of it, they're going to laugh me out the room. And that is why people use fear porn to control this chemtrail narrative, is that they want to arm you with all this fear and get you to use terms that are guaranteeing that when you go to make action, you will fail. So the other question she asked about the NOAA gag orders, there was a second one in the middle, and I'm missing it. But the gag order thing is true. So we're in a situation where, you know, there's a lot of public awareness about this sort of this topic now, geoengineering, weather modification, cloud seeding, cloud ionizers, even ionospheric heaters. You know, because of people like me, you know, and others, you know, we're really raising the awareness about this stuff. So now we're in a situation where they're getting tough questions. And that's where, you know, you just mentioned, Aaron, that on my website I talk about mind control. Mind control, I talk about, I try to put a different spin on it because at the end of the day, chemtrails and mind control are intimately locked because there are perception managers. And perception managers troll the internet and try to control your perception. And their purpose is to use terminology to confuse, tactics to divide, and all that agent provocateur stuff you've ever heard. So these perception managers know that the airline industry is polluting the sky, know that they are heating the planet, know that they are under the gun from carbon taxes, and they don't want anybody to focus on the facts, you know, the facts about how they're passing laws to put biofuels into jets that are biofuels made from landfill waste, biofuels made from chicken fat, biofuels made from algae, camelina plant, and the list goes on. Right now, the airline industry is buying up farms around the world to grow gasoline to make chemtrails go away. And if you don't know about biofuels and you don't know this massive industry that's currently working very desperately to geoengineer jet fuel to either make the clouds go away using things like cirrus cloud seeding with bismuth triiodide, this is Pepto-Bismol sprayed from planes to make chemtrails melt away, laser ice multiplication for geoengineering, this is shooting lasers at chemtrails from the ground to make the ice smaller and make it spread out and coat the entire sky. You can't make this stuff up.
Wow.
And the final one that's really on the board right now is use biofuels on takeoff, and use sulfur-doped fuel at altitude, the two-tank solution. This is what was proposed right after Ulrich Schumann said, hey, we got a problem with these contrails heating the planet. We need to make them cool the planet. We need to geoengineer these now. This is a circumvention of international law. There are bans in place on geoengineering, but because they've been, quote, accidentally geoengineering for 60 years, actually geoengineering now isn't such a big thing now, is it? And that's why I say it's dangerous that people like he who shall not be mentioned.
I caught myself.
Oh, man.
Lord Voldemort.
Somebody hit their finger on the button.
When Voldemort tells you that geoengineering is already happening, perception managers would tell you that is called normalization. It's already going on. Methane is going to blow up the planet.
Oh, yeah.
We need geoengineering to save you from methane. So it's a fine line to walk to say that geoengineering, the program, is already happening when they're trying so desperately to legalize geoengineering.
Jim, we got to take a quick break, but I want to come right back to that because I want to talk about the sky catching on fire.
Yeah. The other thing too, that it's causing global warming, and that we're causing it. I want to do that too.
We could talk about that.
Yeah, and Lori's last question was about the herringbone patterns. I actually made a list.
Oh,
yeah. I knew if I made a list, we'd be okay. So
thank you, because I didn't have a pen, and I was like, oh,
no,
God.
It's okay.
We'll hit that when we come back. We've got to take a quick break so they don't pile up at the back end there.
No worries. We'll be right back with our friend Jim Lee talking about geoengineering and fear porn, the catchiest title we've ever had. Thanks, Jim.
I need a sign. Let me know you're here. All of these lines are being crossed over the atmosphere.
I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow this cloud's illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all.
I don't know clouds at all, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah.
And the more I learn, the less I like them. Hey, is the secret ingredients that they're putting in the fuel, does that also include the barium and the strontium and all the magic ingredients we're finding in the soil today? Uh-oh. Is Jim there?
Is Jim on mute?
Jim? Did we lose Jim?
Jim? Oh, no, we're going to end.
I'm here.
I was are we going to have to end the way we began?
No, heck no. And I do want to apologize for putting you in such a bad spot.
It's okay. We threw your wife under the bus.
I miscommunicated with my wife, my schedule, and I double booked myself, which is horrible. So my apologies for
that's
that.
All
I will
right.
never ever do it again.
We had some,
it's
we had
totally
some good
my
fun
fault.
At your
These
expense.
People are excellent people.
Oh, thanks for that.
Well, we're going to force you to come on. And,
his wife forced him to say it was his fault.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again, and we'll have to do the full 2 hours so that we can really dig into this. Are we running out of time? I just
of course.
Just jump on that.
Yeah, we
that
have herring, like 5 minutes.
The
do the herringbone thing. Yeah.
Those are also called Lee waves. And my last name is Lee. Lee waves are also called gravity waves. I don't want to have a discussion about gravity because it's really a sticky topic. But at the end of the day, that's part of why I mapped out all of these high-powered microwaves around the world. You can see them at climateviewer.org. When you have multiple million-watt microwaves around the world, and nobody really talking about the fact that, you know, gravity waves can be created by these high-powered microwaves, especially like HARP creating ELF waves. These are frequencies that are low frequency that can affect your brain. They can affect earthquakes. When we're talking about ELF waves and low frequencies, that's where it starts to get interesting. And I hope to be putting out something lengthy on that to get some science behind it, because unfortunately, there are very few people who are willing to talk about an interaction between electromagnetics and weather. It is very rare that I can find documented proof that ties these together. So that's why I don't, you know, I don't harp about it very much, because I need something that I can hold up in a court of law to back up what I'm going to say, because I don't want to mislead people. But I can tell you this, something that nobody's heard about in this audience, go up, look up cloud ionizers on climateviewer.com. And cloud ionizers are cloud seeding with electricity, releasing ions into the atmosphere to steer atmospheric rivers or tropospheric rivers. And interestingly enough, in 2012, a company got a permit to modify the weather in Texas to steer an atmospheric river to Texas. And since 2012, Texas has been flooded and California's been dry because their river has stopped coming.
And is that a result of what they did in Texas, you think?
I certainly do. I wrote an article called How Texas Stole California's Rain.
Wow.
Well, there
no,
you.
You're right. I don't think many people have heard about that.
And the other thing I would like to throw out for you California droughters, there was a study called Cal Water 2015, and in it the term overseeding has been now floated in the scientific industry. And what they're basically saying is that all of the pollution from these planes going overhead are putting too many seeds into the sky. And because there are too many seeds up there, the water cannot get big enough to fall. So that's another effect of chemtrails that you never would have considered. It's called water scavenging or overseeding. It actually puts too many particles for them to get big enough to make raindrops to fall. And that's why we get flooding on the East Coast and drought conditions on the West Coast. All of that moisture is attaching to all of these seeds. They can't fall. And then finally, enough moisture builds up, we have torrential rainfall on the East Coast.
And a lot of that's
Who's doing that?
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
All the jet traffic.
Oh, so it's an unintentional.
Whether it's a secret agenda or not, the jet traffic alone, 20 billion gallons of gas a year being burned, 110,000 flights a day, and they're all computer controlled on a highway over your sky. In California, there are three major highways that run from the north to the south of the California. So there are three major highways over California that are constantly trafficked, that are constantly laying down seeds, which are constantly creating drought conditions.
So it's an unintentional effect.
So, okay, so before we lose you in like a minute, global warming, where does that hit with all this?
I was just at a conference last weekend, or on the 2nd of December in Arizona, called Global Warming, an Inconvenient Lie. And it's about how CO2 is a scam. Man-made, anthropogenic-based CO2 is a scam. And this is not a fossil fuel industry narrative, because I, too, have mapped out fracking. I abhor fracking. I was actually the person who did the Bayou Corn sinkhole that Aaron Brockovich held up my map in a court of law when they were suing the fossil fuel industry that destroyed their town. So this is not coming from a fossil fuel guy or some bull crap. This CO2-based narrative is an oversimplification of a very complex process. Pollution is bad. Climate change happens, and CO2 has nothing to do with it.
Thank you for that.
Wow, Jim, that was literally less than a minute.
Yeah, we do need to have you back on, because there's so many more questions we need to ask you. But
we've posted a couple of your really – we've got a ton of good videos, but the history of chemtrails, how to geoengineer a planet with jet fuel, and the other one that's like almost 2 hours, geoengineering, weather modification, and weaponizing nature.
Oh, yeah, and that's a good one.
That's a really good one, and those are all on Jim's site, I know, and I've published them on ours. Thank you very much, Jim Lee. We're going to have you on after the first of the year, and we're going to calendar that directly with your wife.
Please do, because I'm terrible.
You have a Merry Christmas. Thanks so much.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. So we the people will be back after Christmas. We hope you guys have a very merry one. And you can find us all at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bill.